From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Early voting ends this Friday in Georgia, and the governor's race between Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp and charges of voter suppression have landed Georgia squarely in the national spotlight. Secretary of State Kemp's office is facing multiple lawsuits for rejecting registration applications, absentee mail-in ballots, and purging voter rolls, measures Kemp defends as preventing fraud. Last week, a judge ruled that state election officials cannot reject mail-in ballots if signatures do not match those on file. Voter suppression has a long, violent history in Georgia. So what is it today? And how do we as citizens spot it? And how should the state ensure the integrity of elections? Jessica Hoosman is national politics reporter for ProPublica. She oversees a collaborative journalism project called Electionland, a coalition of newsrooms across the U.S. covering problems voters are facing in 2018. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Aline Owens is also with us. She's a lecturer in the Political Science and Public Affairs Department at Savannah State University. Aline, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. I'm going to start with you, Jessica. Just a little primer on Electionland, which GPB is a part of, along with about 100 organizations around the country. What is Electionland doing?
So what we are doing is we're taking in real-time notifications of things that are going wrong at the polls, most notably from the call-in line 866 Our Vote, which is managed by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law. We also have thousands of people across the country who text us or report in their experience at the polls. And we take those reports and we send them back out to local newsrooms so that they know exactly where problems are occurring at the polls and can go straight there. So it's a really powerful tool that allows journalists a great tool bag to cover the election from an administration perspective and not just a campaign perspective.
So, Aline, not everyone thinks voter suppression is happening in Georgia, but Electionland and other projects are monitoring it. This term keeps popping up in the news. What does it actually mean?
Voter suppression are the strategies and methods used, both legal and illegal, to influence the outcome of an election. And it suppresses the vote for particular groups.
Based on what's happening in Georgia, signature match, exact match, voter roll purges, what's happening in Georgia? Does that meet the definition of voter suppression?
Certainly, certainly. It is so interesting. In fact, The Atlantic had an article this month that said that voter suppression is the new old normal. Certainly from Randolph County and back in the early part of the year in April, when they were talking about closing 7 of the 9 polling places. And recently we had the incident in Jefferson County where seniors were initially denied the right to vote. Certainly you've talked about the purge that has been so much in the news, use it or lose it, where about 850,000 registered voters were removed from the polls between 2013 and 2017. And certainly making national news is the exact match law that Georgia has.
And Jessica, you from outside of Georgia in Electionland, what does your organization do when they hear these kind of charges and how do they investigate them?
Right. So we get these charges in. Usually we hear from voters themselves who feel like they have been removed from the rolls unfairly or in many cases haven't received an absentee ballot in the way that they should have or were given incorrect information about how to cure their ballot at the poll or how to cure the mistake on the rolls at the polls. And what we'll do is we will vet that story to make sure that it's true and the voter was well informed. And if they were, then we'll send them to local media so that the local media can use their local expertise and get that message out so that the problems at the polls correct themselves or administrators are made aware of these issues.
Well, we have been asking listeners if they have experienced anything like voter suppression. Got a call from Camilla Dawson of Macon, who reported trouble when she went to cast her ballot early. The poll worker told her that she was registered to vote absentee, but Camilla never received a ballot. Eventually, she was able to vote in person. Here she is.
I'm concerned, and I even asked her, I said, how do I know, how can I be assured that the way I vote today is going to be recorded, actually. I have trust issues with this voting in Georgia.
Well, that is just one person's account. Our reporter did check the Secretary of State's website and found that Camilla's vote was recorded in Bibb County on the 23rd of October. But this speaks to the anxiety about the process. Jessica, do you consider that anxiety in itself to be voter suppression?
You know, I do, and I think that this is one of the things that we're trying to help local media across the country strike a balance in. I think that it is really important to report on these issues. I think that it is important to do so in a way that does not further inflame the situation. I think that the vast majority of people will be able to go to the polls across the country and vote without a problem. And to the extent that we overhype or report problems without reporting also that there is a solution to those problems, we can really stoke flames and convince people that their time is better spent staying at home or staying at work. And so that's really something that we're concerned about. And so as we've helped our partners in Georgia and also other states that are facing similar issues like Texas and Florida and Arizona, we're really trying to encourage our partners to report at the top of their story solutions for voters so that they know that they exist along with the problems.
That's Jessica Hussman from ProPublica. She's a national politics reporter. Also with us, Savannah State lecturer Aline Owens. We're talking about voter suppression past and present. Well, of course, election officials and many citizens say this isn't about suppression. It's about taking measures to prevent voter fraud, which is a good thing. Jessica, I'm wondering, based on your work, which is in data, what kind of evidence is there of fraud?
There isn't there isn't any evidence of fraud. I mean, we see across history isolated attempts at fraud. Very rarely there are campaigns that affect a few dozen ballots here or there. These are usually mail-in ballots or absentee ballot frauds that we see the most numbers for fraudulent ballots cast. But the type of fraud that could be fixed by the steps that people like Brian Kemp or the Texas legislature, for example, take are meant to address a type of fraud that we don't actually ever see, which is voter impersonation or people showing up to the polls and casting ballots in other people's names or fraudulently registering and then voting as that fraudulent person. I think that when we talk about voter fraud, we often talk about it in a way that's not helpful and is not based on the scope of history.
You mentioned the Texas laws. This within hours of the decision in 2013, a Supreme Court case, Shelby County versus Holder. This was for voter protections. Those were enacted, and in several other states. Ellen, give us a little bit of a sense of that history of what happened after this case. And please, first, a summary of the case.
Well, Shelby County versus Holder basically went to the Supreme Court and tested the Voting Rights Act. In the Voting Rights Act, Section 4 mandated or provided for a formula that states were determined whether or not they were violators historically of voting laws. And the Section 5, if you were a violator of voting rights, then Section 5 says that you have to have preclearance. And the Supreme Court basically said, well, you know, there's no evidence in Shelby County, so no, the preclearance requirement for Section 5 is not going to apply going forth. And with that, in 2013, that's when the case was decided. With that, in 2013, we saw the resurgence of a lot of voter suppression.
So then there was previously under federal law, under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, the federal government was in charge of or overseeing elections. In 2013, it reverted back to the states, correct?
Well, now, the states never gave up their authority to govern and supervise elections. That is a state function. But because of the massive discrimination and practices of voter suppression, certain states, particularly southern states, but not exclusively the southern states, they had to get preclearance whenever a voting law or practice was changed. And that decision with Shelby County in Alabama versus Holder, the former AG, Eric Holder, said that they no longer met the criteria in Section 4, and therefore the preclearance criteria in Section 5 was not necessary.
So, Jessica, looking at that and the effect of Shelby versus Holder on elections, give us a little sense of the history of how voter suppression has worked in the past, because we're hearing these accusations of it today. Are the tactics different?
I think that now people can be a little bit more open about the fact that of what they're doing. I think that the Supreme Court has been has had interesting rulings in the past couple of years on this topic. They seem not to be very concerned with this topic. They seem to have a lot of deference for states, which means that as long as states and governing officials are not overt in saying that their intent in behind passing these laws is racist or some other negative thing, that they can kind of do what they want, and we should assume that legislators are acting above board. And so what that allows legislators to do is pass laws that are facially neutral, even though they have a disproportionate impact on a specific group of people. I think, for example, there's a lot of evidence that the Texas voter ID law restricts its harms to a very small subgroup of the population, but that is not being considered as a motivation. We can only look sort of straight at exactly what they say that the purpose is. So I think that legislators across the country are able to pass laws that impact a very specific group of people without much threat of oversight.
So no longer poll taxes, no longer literacy tests. But what do you think in the reporting that you're hearing from states prevents a person from voting today?
I think that a lot of what prevents people from voting is sort of normal things like poll worker confusion. So I think that there are certainly thousands of people across the country who are prevented from voting because of restrictive laws like voter ID or voter roll purges. But I think the vast majority of people who end up being disenfranchised on election day are disenfranchised because of poorly trained poll workers, because of bad machines that don't work or don't cast your ballot in the way that you think that they are. And I think that all goes back to a lack of dedication to fixing election infrastructure in this country. And I think it also goes back to the fact that we're in a really interesting time right now. So we saw this in Texas ahead of the 2016 election. I think we're going to see it in Missouri ahead of this election, that voting laws are changing so frequently now that poll workers can't keep up with the laws. So the Missouri voter ID law changed as recently as a few days ago. And so now thousands of poll workers in that state are going to have to be retrained, and some of them will be retrained poorly.
Jessica Huseman, she's ProPublica national politics reporter overseeing the ElectionLand project. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And also with us, Aline Owens, lecturer in the Political Science and Public Affairs Department at Savannah State. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. We're going to uncover Georgia's long history of racial violence, honoring victims of lynching in the state. This is On Second Thought.